Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Freshman 16 podcast. This is your host, Joel Ingersoll, along with co-host Libby Gilliland. And in this episode, we're going to highlight the challenges of maintaining relationships in college, whether that is a dating relationship with someone at another school and or relationships with family and how to effectively maintain them. Homesickness affects so many students, especially first-year students. So we also tackle that and provide some advice on how to access help and where to do that on campus. So tune in and thanks for joining. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Freshman 16 podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Libby Gilliland. Libby, how you doing?
I am great. How are you?
I'm good. And we want to remind everybody that we did make a little name shift in the podcast title to reflect the 16 weeks of the college semester. We want to provide the best mental health information possible to all of our listeners, hence the name change. So same emphasis, we're going to focus on the same really important things to communicate to students and families about mental health and college adjustment and things like that. We are more than midway through September. And one of the things that Libby and I were talking about, want to address in this episode, is the nature and impact of long distance relationships for college students. And when we were talking offline, we were talking about these just aren't dating relationships that we're referring to. These are, you know, certainly the relationships people have with family members, especially first time college students being away from home, being away from friends, and really kind of managing all the adjustments that come with, you know, a new college experience and how to maintain and balance those relationships.
Yeah, I think it's a topic that a lot of people go through, but it's not really talked about when it comes to mental health enough, I feel like. I mean, I'm in my own long distance relationship. I'm far away from my family. I have parents, siblings, and nephew that was just born. So I've gone through it all when it comes to this and haven't really gotten the chance to talk on it. So I think it's an important topic at this point of the semester because it's a struggle for a lot of students.
Yeah, it sure is. And, you know, you alluded to a lot of things in relation to it, in particular, like, you know, dating and all that, someone who's at another school. In general, what we know about adjustment is that it's expected, it's normal. There's a lot of psychological experiences that come with college adjustment, anxiety, depression, homesickness, which can include anxiety and depression. And generally, it lasts for a couple of weeks, and then it starts to subside. A lot of kids get into college, and right away, if they don't feel great about it, they want to, you know, kind of duck out and leave and come home. What we encourage people to do is to give it a couple of weeks to see if that adjustment takes hold, if the symptoms of anxiety and depression, if they're there, lower, and if they start to feel better about connecting with people on campus, making friends, socializing more, you know, going to class, etc., whether that helps.
Yeah, I mean, for freshmen and even for a senior like me, going from home or, you know, a different place back to college, it's a huge shift. I mean, you're in a completely different world. It feels like you're living two lives almost. And so it does take time to adjust, and, you know, it's a harsh kind of realization when you get back to school. But as you said, you do kind of settle in, and as you find a routine, I think it really helps to just kind of stick in there. And it's tough, but I think at this point in the semester, we're starting to see kids kind of settle in and hopefully feel a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad to hear that you're observing that, and that, you know, on most, if not all campuses, they're observing that too. However, there are a percentage of kids who continue to struggle significantly with adjustment. And those, whether that's driven by missing their family or being away from home for the first time or their friends or their significant other, for many people that really lingers.
Yeah, so what do you think a college student who's in a long distance relationship or far away from home, how is their experience different than someone who's close to home or doesn't have those lingering relationships?
Well, I think that when it comes to the student who's far away from home and is involved in a relationship with someone prior to getting to college, there's a lot to be discussed. And I think that there are a few really, really key factors to talk through and negotiate. And they might be difficult, assuming that people decide to stay together and give it a try while they're at different schools. First and foremost is the embracement of why each person is going to college to begin with, right? It's to discover, develop, learn, evolve both personally and professionally, identify strengths, challenges, declare a major, et cetera, et cetera. And it's really critical that if people are going to stay together, that each other supports that process for their partner, that they embrace it for themselves and they support and encourage it for their partner. The risk becomes often, Libby, when one member or both aren't maxing out their college experience for the sake of the relationship. So, for example, they decline offers to go to parties or to socialize because they're waiting for that text. They decline opportunities or don't even look into opportunities to join clubs or study abroad, which can have just such an important impact on a college investment and personal and professional development. But they're sacrificing those things for the sake of the relationship. Perhaps they're hearing from their partner, you know, well, what am I going to do? Or how could you go there? Or what do you mean you're hanging out with other girls or other guys or whatever it may be? There's a whole host of factors and feelings that really ought to be ironed out, that become part of the realistic experience of being in college. And if it's not mutually supported, that is not going to go well.
Yeah, that's a really great point. And I think it's kind of a feeling of guilt. Hey, if I go do this or I join this club, what are they going to do? Because they were going to call me at that time. And it's very hard to prioritize different schedules and finding time for that relationship in the midst of your college experience, because you don't want to diminish it. Like you said, you have to go to college to develop, and if you're not maxing out on all of the experiences, you know, joining all of the clubs and really digging into your major and, you know, me as an athlete committing to that, if you have another person that's kind of isn't supportive of the things that you're doing, it makes it very, very difficult for you to get up every day and keep doing those things, feeling the guilt that you're not prioritizing them.
Absolutely. And, you know, that leads to the uncovering of things that may not have been apparent earlier on during the relationship in high school or over the summer before college or whatever. One of the big things is, like, if we think about that age demographic that attends college, we're talking about an age range where the development of identity and the big question of like, who am I? What do I want to be? What do I want to study? What are my strengths? What are my challenges? Those all come into play. They're very, very normal questions. Some of them generate more anxiety than others, but they're very, very normal questions. And what often happens in situations where there isn't mutual understanding and support and encouragement is that for the first time, one or both members of the couple may start to experience some personal insecurity. Now, it's normal to go through spots of insecurity while in college, while figuring out who we are, what we're good at, what we're bad at, et cetera, what makes us uncomfortable. Like that's very, very normal. However, it can generate a lot of questions, conversations, and accusatory statements. So for example, and you guys deal with this, we didn't have to deal with this necessarily, right? So if I'm dating someone who goes to a different college than I do, and if I'm having a problem with, you know, the relationship and what this person's doing, and I'm kind of caught up in that, which is really a reflection of my insecurity, and I'm having trouble being happy for her happiness, and late one night when maybe I don't hear from her, but I know that she's out with her friends, and I see on Instagram or Snapchat a picture of her with other guys, does that trigger an argument? Does that trigger accusations or questions? Like, who are these people? That happens all the time. And so it challenges the trust in the relationship. It also challenges the personal security of each individual.
Yeah, that's a great example. I've heard so many stories that's happened, you know, personally to me. So what do you recommend in that, you know, sort of scenario? How to not feel guilty, or how to continue to, you know, have your college experience with that person and feel okay? How do you keep the relationship going? If you really do love that person, want to be with that person, how do you make it work?
Yeah, so there's a couple of layers to it. You know, the first layer that of challenge that it presents really is the work that each of us has to do to become comfortable with who we are, and so much so that we're able to be happy for another person's happiness. So if they're out having a good time, it might be hard at first, especially if we're not doing that.
Yeah.
Right, so they're out being fulfilled and having a great time and making great friends, and I might be struggling a little bit, so it really kind of generates some real effort to be happy for that person. I think that's sort of a big starting point. And then it becomes, hopefully, a conversation of, wow, you know, I saw that picture on Instagram last night. Looks like you were having an awesome time. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
So share with me the experience. And whether that happens of something that a person sees their partner at a party or studying abroad, that's a big one too, actually. Or wherever it, whatever it is, like to celebrate that moment with me.
Yeah.
You know, tell me about these friends. I can't wait to meet them. Rather than like, who's that? You know, and or some other kind of accusatory question or statement that often torpedoes relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. It kind of builds on that layer of trust. You know, if you trust that person that they're not going to hurt you, changing your mindset, because it is really hard at first to, you know, say, oh my gosh, they're hanging out with all of these people and I'm not there. And it can feel really lonely if you're at home not doing anything that night, watching them have fun. But if you're constantly attacking them for who they're with, they're going to stop going out because of you. And you never want that to happen, because again, on that college experience, college isn't fun if you don't make any friends or are scared to go out. So you kind of have to build a trust relationship and know that you're going to talk to each other and support each other through that.
It's an excellent point. You know, college isn't fun when that happens. You know, you figure you've left high school. Prior to that, you left middle school, and from middle school on, really, maybe even happens a little bit before then, a person's, if we could think of our lives consisting of several different domains, the social domain becomes a priority, certainly in middle school. Like, we see it all the time. I have to coach parents on this multiple times a day and night. Where for kids, like, being accepted into a friend group, I hate that phrase, but a friend group or connect with other people is priority. It's how kids become personally validated. You know, they're going to seek acceptance and validation through their friends. So they might even do it with people that they really don't know personally through social media before they would their parents or other people. So if that domain, that social domain, is absent for one in college, that becomes a real sore spot, especially if their partner has a really fulfilling social experience.
Yeah, I mean, it feels really lonely if you don't have those people around you. And, you know, at the end of the day, in a relationship, you want the other person to be happy. So even though, it's hard, kind of bouncing back and forth and not being there with that person, you are going to college for a reason, and you have to have joy in their experiences and your own experiences. And if you're both having a great time and meeting new people, I think that should bring you together. You should have something to talk about at the end of the day. And if you're sitting there accusing each other of hanging out with this person or I don't like that person, it's toxic. So you're going to have a much better time if you commit to being positive about the other person's experiences.
Absolutely. Ideally, you know, that's the case, and couples and hopefully are able to work toward that. Now, you bring up a very, very critical point, though, and something that every person should really monitor, and that is the moments where it turns toxic. I mean, toxic relationships occur for a variety of reasons. One of those reasons is that if a member of that couple is miserable, right?
Yeah.
And is at the moment during that experience of misery and or depression or whatever it is, begins to tear down the happiness of the other member of the couple. Because seeing them happy is so incredibly painful, and they don't want just company, they want miserable company. So yeah, They'll start to tear it down, you know, in many, many forms. It might be commenting on the friends that they see in pictures, labeling those friends, making accusatory statements, or even posing very challenging, trapping questions, like, well, don't you care about me? Or how could you not think of me when you're out partying and having a good time?
Yeah.
Which leads to what you were talking about earlier, like feelings of guilt or questioning, oh my God, am I doing the wrong thing? You know, if you're a college kid in a relationship and you're out having fun with friends, and it's healthy, safe, good fun, there's nothing to feel bad about.
Yeah.
If you start feeling bad about it, and you feel bad about it because someone else is questioning you, that is something to look at very seriously.
Yeah. And it goes back to living, you know, feeling like you're living that double life. When you're at school, you're going to be around a whole different crew of people, and you want to build strong relationships with them. And, you know, your partner, while on the top of mind a lot, if you're out at a party, you shouldn't have to think about only that person. You know, living in the moment and embracing your experience is really important. And at the end of the day, call that person, tell them you love them, but you have to balance. And, you know, I think it's such an important topic to talk about because I see it so much, and just, you know, great points of how to not turn a great relationship into something not great.
Absolutely. And, you know, all of those things occur pretty regularly. Like, this is the stuff that college kids talk about. Those that are in, you know, relationships. That or they express just feeling held back. They get frustrated with feeling like they can't talk to this person, or they can't go there, or, you know, what if they find out like this person's been there? And it's just, again, it really upends what is supposed to be a really fulfilling experience and investment. You know, you're gonna pay, well, you know, well, families usually pay, but tens of thousands of dollars for a miserable experience, or to feel like shit because my boyfriend or girlfriend or partner or whatever is, you know, a jerk the whole time that I'm on this campus.
I think being in a relationship long distance just makes you think twice about every step you take. You know, you're not really acting out of impulse. Well, what would my partner think about this? Is this okay? And then, you know, maybe text them or call them and say, what do you think about this? And then you make your decision. And, you know, being on the same page is great, but compared to the regular college student who can just go make those decisions without thinking twice about it, it's different.
Yes, it is different, right? And that's why I think that, you know, again, like going back to first year students especially, who have been dating, you know, their partner in high school. Well, and if you've gone to the same high school, like, wow, okay, like, so you know each other. And there's some things that you probably just take for granted, you know, like you're not necessarily texting that person throughout the day, maybe here and there, maybe then at night or whatever. But now you're on college campuses hours away or time zones away even. And if you don't get that text message, when you're expecting it, what does that lead to? Insecurity, questioning, mixed messages. So the conversation there becomes really important about what each person's expectations and needs are upfront. You know, they're hard conversations. They're necessary for a healthy relationship, though.
Yeah, they are tough conversations. And I do want to kind of ask you, when, apart from a long distance romantic relationship, when it comes to family, being, you know, I'm 10 hours away from my family, that feeling of homesickness, is that, how do you deal with that? Is there any coping mechanisms that you would recommend? And I know it's a lot easier now with FaceTime and all of the social media we have to kind of keep up with that family, but it doesn't come close to being in person with them. So how do you cope with that?
Yeah, so homesickness is certainly a big one, and it doesn't just have to appear as a first-year student. That can happen throughout college. So first of all, in general, the experience of homesickness, while it doesn't feel good, is good. And I say that it is good because it, you know, signifies that your relationship with your family is meaningful. The connection that you have with your home and your town and your community is meaningful. Those are very good things. So the discomfort of not being there, in one way, is very reinforcing that, wow, these people really mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
Wow, my home does, my room does, my dog, whatever. I think one of the things that becomes really important is to remind yourself, well, why am I going to college? Why am I going there? Why am I investing my time and life and money there? It is to develop and to learn and discover my strengths and to evolve and strengthen, right?
Yeah.
And get better and learn about my potential. Now, all of that takes struggle. And this is one of the areas of struggle. So for some kids, they can't wait to get the hell out the door. It's a big relief for them. For one reason or other, maybe there's trouble at home and it's not a good situation. But for the kids who really miss their home, well, that's okay. And to embrace the discomfort, which sounds a little contradictory, that's really, it's really key. And then to negotiate, with your family or whomever it is, like, okay, like, I need to talk every Sunday night for 20 minutes. Let's do a FaceTime call or, Zoom call or, whatever. I need to see everybody's faces.
Yeah.
I think what becomes perhaps a little uncertain in anticipating homesickness is to define what you need. What kind of contact do you need?
Yeah, I think it makes perfect sense and it's a real change of perspective. Okay, why am I at college? I miss these people, but I have the opportunity to be here to get the degree that I want. You're there for a reason, and remembering that is really important. But at the same time, like you said, having those tough conversations, like, hey, mom and dad, I do need to talk to you every week or twice a week, or with your siblings, and maintaining those relationships that are important to you are that's really vital to your development too. They can give you advice and help you through what you're going through. You can share your positive experiences with them, and they want to hear about that.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And, going back to the sharing of experiences with parents and with siblings or whomever it may be at home, that's a great way to address or seek some comfort in any kind of feelings of being homesick. To share those stories and experiences about campus, and things that you're discovering, whether it's a major or, a cool conversation that you have with a professor or a great club that you're in, or, hey, I want to study abroad. Like to share those experiences with people at home. It definitely helps.
Yeah, and it's gonna make you feel better about why you're there and your experiences. And if you can sit on a phone call and talk for 30 minutes about all the great things that you're doing, it's gonna make your family feel good. And when you get off the phone, it's gonna make you feel better, like, hey, I'm doing all these great things and this was the right decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Libby, one of the things that you and I have talked about in previous episodes is that there are going to be an infinite number of things that college kids get tested on that they're never graded on. And this is a big one,
Yeah.
right? So you can do all the college prep work you want. But if you're a kid who has maybe never gone to camp, sleepover camp, or a sports camp where you're away for a week, let alone several weeks in the summer, you get tested on your ability to manage adjustment, and homesickness is part of that adjustment.
Yeah.
So you just don't get a grade on it, right? Now, to use campus resources to help you do that or help a student do that is very critical as well.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, college is really throwing you into the real world with a little help. And it's practice for when you graduate. Maybe you're not going to live at home, so you've put in place these mechanisms to help yourself and help your family stay connected or your significant other. But in college, you do have the resources to get through it and learn how to develop and cope with those challenges.
Absolutely. So let's play this out a little bit, right? So a kid who's a first year student and has an idea of what they want to major in, let's say it's finance or marketing, business degree, and when they arrive on campus, they realize they're really homesick. They feel it's overwhelming, and they go home. And they don't test it out, they don't wait it out. They don't give it 2 weeks. They're there for a day, half a day, and they leave. And then they figure out how to get through college locally, and then they land a job. And after they graduate from their local college, and their job involves travel, and travel with assignment, meaning like you're gonna go live in the middle of Wyoming for a month. Well, a lot of times what happens is that homesickness and all the anxiety that comes with it gets reactivated. And some people turn down opportunities to work at really great places because they haven't worked through that.
Yeah.
So again, like going back to one of our, or at least my foundations about college is that it's about personal development, and it's about these particular things that show up on our radar that may have never shown up before that are really part of getting a degree, and in fact, in many cases, bigger than that.
Yeah, it's all about embracing the challenges that you're facing and coming out stronger on the other side, and it's a life lesson that everybody's going to have to learn, so working on it through college is going to make it a little bit easier when you get into the working real world.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm not one to, particularly as a clinical psychologist, I'm not one to suggest that people torture themselves in that experience and sort of just stick it out, tough it out. I'm not saying that. If it's completely overwhelming, it also might be a question of readiness to go to college. You know, we're kind of been socialized forever. You know, you go to high school and then you go to college. It's kind of changing, sort of, maybe, not really, a little bit. there's still this emphasis that this is what you do right away. Some kids just aren't ready to do it right away.
Yeah, I mean,
there's nothing wrong with taking that gap year or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And then if a kid does decide to go, this is very, very important. They need to be aware of their withdrawal deadlines.
Yeah.
So, for example, a lot of colleges, and this is something we don't even really consider, when a student accepts or pays the initial fee to commit to a college, and they're going to live on campus, the dates there become very, very important, because usually there's a date that is anchored in, say, early September, the first 2 weeks of the semester, where in order to get 100% of tuition back, you have to withdraw by a certain date. After that date, it's 50%.
Okay.
And then there's a second date that usually occurs at the end of September, where if you don't withdraw by then, you're not getting any money back. So if you withdraw because you're completely homesick and haven't said anything, and it's mid-October, you might be, that might be really difficult. That might be a difficult fight.
Yeah, yeah. And it's perfectly okay to, you know, withdraw in that early September and then take your gap year and then go back. I've known a lot of students that have done that, and just realizing it's okay if you need the break, but at the same time, how much can you tough it through and learn from those experiences? So visiting a psychologist to help you work through those kind of things, on-campus resources, is they're important, and they can help you with things like this too.
Yeah, and not only the psychologists, but advisors. You know, what I think one of my questions is, when I talk to kids in the first few weeks of a semester who are considering leaving, is what resources have you tapped into on campus, and have you exhausted those resources?
Yeah.
If not, are you willing to do it before making that decision? Because those can often, and more often than not, really bridge the gap and lower the level of homesickness, the anxiety, the depression that accompanies it.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to making a connection with somebody on campus. If you're homesick and don't want to go out and meet people, or, you know, like you said, tap into those resources, you're not going to have anyone to stay for. You know, if you meet a great group of friends, have an advisor that you really connect with, those are the small connections that are going to get you through the year and help you, you know, come out on the other side of it and have a good college experience. And it's really in those first few weeks, months, that you use those resources and meet those people, you know, to continue and not give up on it.
Absolutely. Those become really the critical set of factors that often highlight whether or not a student is ready, or whether this school is the right place for them. And if not, and they have to withdraw, what becomes monumentally important, we're going to save this for another episode because it could be an episode all of itself. If a student does withdraw, what they do when they go back home.
Yeah.
Because all their friends might be at college. And that has its own set of impact psychologically. So we want to be sure of it. And if that's the case, then we really want to plan for that semester away. And again, we'll highlight that in a separate episode, but the impact on relationships, though, the long distance relationships, the homesickness, the dating relationships, on adjustment, on mental health, is absolutely significant.
Yeah. And, you know, with anything in mental health, it starts with creating a conversation about it and, you know, reaching out for help, or finding a friend who's in the same situation, who's in a long distance relationship or isn't close to home, and they can really help you through it too. You know, I moved in with a roommate who was hours and hours away from home like I was, and, you know, we had that to relate on, and we kind of got through it together. So meeting that person is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. So we want to certainly, you know, encourage our listeners to, one, get connected and to commit to it, you know. And it doesn't have to be, you know, joining a million clubs or, you know, joining the biggest sorority or fraternity or anything like that, but to commit to connecting and testing the waters socially with different clubs or different people in your class or in your hallways or seminars, whatever shows up on campus. It definitely utilize those resources that are available to you on campus, particularly, you know, if you're in a relationship, though, too, that isn't making you feel real good. And it's not just about missing the person, it's about feeling bad. Seek out consultation on that. and be mindful of those sort of signs of toxicity in relationships, and to be sure that that relationship is real balanced, real mutually supportive, and continue to work on not only creating fulfillment and happiness for yourself, which takes work, but also working on yourself so you can do that for your partner too.
Yep, absolutely.
Awesome. So I think we covered some good stuff. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and spreading the word. Libby, as always, thanks for co-hosting.
Yep, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. We'll catch up with you all sometime soon. Thank you.